iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
One committed activist is driving the point home in his Free Palestine mobile billboard truck, and it may be coming to a neighborhood near you. And the math is not mathing in Rockland County, New York, where Democratic senator won decisively in 2024, but Kamala Harris got zero votes. Things that make you go, Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. While Jeffrey Epstein victims hinting at collectively revealing their own list of prominent sexual pedophiles, Trump ratcheting up his fascism by announcing National Guard troops being deployed to Chicago, rumors about Trump's death being greatly exaggerated, and while the death toll surpasses 1,400 from a deadly earthquake in Afghanistan, all these things competing for headline space with the slow motion genocide in Gaza. But one very committed, creative, and determined activist on a mission found a way to keep Gaza front and center. Randy Credico, an American perennial political candidate, a comedian, a radio host at WBAI, and an activist, has been cruising around New York City for months in a mobile billboard truck that makes a statement to free Palestine. And yesterday, the truck came to the nation's capital. He's my guest this morning on What's at Stake. Good morning, Randy Credico, and welcome to What's at Stake.
It really is an honor to be on with you, Avery. I've been listening to you for years.
Well, so, don't careful now. You're dating me. It's my pleasure as well, Randy. So, look, I'm looking at your write-up in WikiLeaks, and you clearly have a passion for politics. You ran against Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer in 2010. You launched a campaign for mayor of New York in 2013. You challenged New York Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2014, and now a mobile billboard with full-length pictures of the Gaza atrocities calling for free Palestine. Why this issue now, Randy?
Well, you know, you got to do something. You watch the murders, you watch the starvation policy. I mean, you don't know what to do. You know what I mean? I can go to protests and all of that. There are very few regular protests in New York City. I don't know about here. I think there's an encampment here. So I figured, now I have a radio show, I have a podcast, and it's the usual suspects that are listening and watching. So I decided I would take all of these images onto the streets of New York, and we did it in every borough. And so hundreds of thousands of people who don't watch or listen to alternative radio, alternative media, could see it, what they're missing by watching MSNBC or Fox or, you know, CNN. So that was the point there. And so I decided, there's a friend of mine who's Lebanese who said, why don't you take it to D.C.? I said, it's expensive. So he said, but you got to do it. Go to D.C. So we launched a campaign down here yesterday. A couple of days we'll be coming back. But yesterday and today we'll be floating around all over downtown D.C. and other areas here for about eight hours. And, you know, it's important that you do, you got to do something. All right. Mm-hmm. You know, Aaron Bush, no, I'm not doing that. All right. But if people can commit themselves to that level, why can't I go down here and drive around with this truck? So,
describe the truck to our listeners. It looks pretty huge, large.
This is not
something that's going to be overlooked. You're going to see that truck coming
it's amazing. It's three-sided, so you have images on the back that are distinct from the images on the sides. So you have the sides with images that are rotating, and then you have ones in the back that are different because of the sizing. And so you can see it no matter what, if it goes by, or if people see it and they take pictures of it, and you get stuck in traffic. And we play music. Today we'll be playing music by Roger Waters and his latest piece that we unveiled on WBAI 2 weeks ago with him, called Samud. Samud. Mm-hmm. And
So describe the pictures, Randy, that are digitally plastering the sides of the truck. What are people seeing actually?
Well, you have people, kids holding empty buckets trying to get food. You got pictures of war criminal. The Netanyahu, wanted pictures. You've got the journalists that were killed last week spread across. You've got there's so many different. We've got one that Sam Husseini came up with called Zionist Occupied Territory, which is the capital. So we've got two different visions of that he put together. And you got women there, you got grieving women, you got it's tough to look at sometimes. But the one in New York, of course, we were a lot more explicit than we are here because, it's the owner of the truck down here. I have one in New York that I use. The owner of the truck down here has limited the panoramic kind of vision you would see of what's going on in Gaza. But it's still really good, and mm-hmm. I'm happy with it. And you get the picture. And not as many photos, but a lot. There's still like mm-hmm. 35, 40 different photos. It drives the point there. And, everyone that sees it stops and they take pictures of it. And, mm-hmm. and so we're looking for spots today. If somebody wants to reach me, have them reach you. If there's a spot, if they have a flash mm-hmm. demonstration. They had one yesterday at the Israeli embassy that we stopped by, and it was just getting underway. And mm-hmm. of course, the police keep moving you along. You can't get certain places you can't go. These truck routes here that are non-truck routes. So we're going to see mm-hmm. if we can actually impale without breaking the law. I don't want to be arrested today. I took my passport. I'm a third generation Italian, but maybe they'll say that my grandparents came in here illegally.
Now, I hate to keep interrupting. I do apologize.
No, it's fine. I'm rambling on the film. More focused than I.
You said earlier that you had music playing, but is there any kind of commentary or political discussion or dialogue that people can hear from the truck?
No, that would be the next thing that if I'm going to be parked in one place for hours, I would put that on. I'd put video. I've had video on in New York City, but it's just like this. I was coming down with a New York City truck, right? But the guy's engine collapsed the day before we were leaving. So there was somebody down here that had a truck, and it's just difficult to get everything, inside that truck, particularly those kind of conversations. So it's going to be images and music, and I think the argument's made right there. I mean, a picture's worth 1,000 words. These are worth 1,000,000.
So have you gotten what kind of reactions have you gotten from the folks in Washington, D.C.? And of course, D.C. is crawling with National Guard troops. Have you been stopped and detained or questioned by them?
We were stopped a couple of times, but we were let through. They didn't stop for the content. It's just that we were going up a road that we weren't supposed to go on. And I'm surprised, haven't been stopped. But the reaction is great. I got to New York City because the demographics is a much more difficult area to navigate. I've had bottles thrown at me. I've been sandwiched by cars a la Sonny Corleone and The Godfather, stopping behind me, stopping in front of me, and some hardcore Zionists are pounding on the window and calling me names. And then the Israeli embassy, they came out and tried to take my phone, and not the embassy, but the consulate on 2nd Avenue and 42nd Street. And they had me believing they were with the NYPD. They were actually Shin Bet, but they tried to get my phone. They jostled me around. I finally asked a guy on the corner, I said, a beat cop, I said, are they with you? He said, no. I don't have to get my camera. No, but they will kill you. The guy smiled. He said, not really, mm-hmm. but this half serious. Mm-hmm. And going out to Cedarhurst, which has got the largest population mm-hmm. of Hasidic in outside of Tel Aviv. And they were really rough. Land sales out there. I mm-hmm. went out there and they actually impounded the truck out there. And,
okay.
So now,
all that was in New York. Now, what about here? Did you go to Capitol Hill?
Yes, we're going to go back to Capitol Hill today. Just like Capitol Hill, like I said, the embassy. We went by, all over the place. George Washington mm-hmm. University, trying to really get a sense. But there has been nothing but high fives and thumbs up with this down here. It's mm-hmm. a lot different than it is in New York.
Oh, about Anacostia? Did you go to Anacostia?
You know, we're going to go. That's where my friend Max used to live. We went there the last time. So you think that's a good spot to go?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what kind of reception you get. And what about 14th and U?
I think we were there yesterday. Yeah, 14th and U. Where? I think so. I don't know the city that well, but if you say so, we're going to make Anacostia and 14th Street and U. We went down K Street. We went by K Street. The guy who's driving down here has lived there all of his life. A real nice guy. So he knows the entire area. So we're just going to go out there. Yesterday, Sam gave the directions yesterday, the hot spots. And I'm going to let this guy call the shots today, outside of what you just said, 14th Street and you and Anacostia.
Mm-hmm. So now, I know you say free Palestine, but what is it, Randy Credico, that you're hoping to achieve with your rolling info mobile?
Well, I'm not going to change policy, I know, but I'm not going to change policy with that. It's just part. Everybody's got to do what they can do. You know what I mean? I do the radio show. It's not enough. And what I'm trying to do is just add to the pressure. Everyone that does what they do out, demonstrators down here, Code Pink, all of these different groups do what they can do to move the ball forward and try to, you know, get the message out there. And that's what we're trying to do on the street here, is educate the people on the street or get some people inspired, even if it's a handful. I don't know how many people it gets around on social media that the effort is to urge other people to do something, even that if they would like to get a truck. They should get a truck and put those images out on the street, mm-hmm. people who do not see them. Because if you turn it on broadcast TV, you're not going to see any of those images, not even the reporters. Ari Melber didn't show the six reporters that were killed. Not that I watch Ari Melber, but he's a journalist, supposedly, but he didn't show the six journalists from Al Jazeera and other places. Right. So, but that's his responsibility to do it, but of course not. So you got to do what you can do and hopefully inspire. People inspired me. You inspire me. I mean, I'm saying we all got to inspire other people to get involved. You just can't sit on your hands and do nothing.
Exactly.
You know?
That's Randy Credico. We also have another guest in our studio with us this morning. Saeed Erekat is a Palestinian journalist and the Washington Bureau Chief for the Jerusalem-based newspaper Al-Quds, and he teaches at American University. Welcome, Saeed.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, Andy.
So, Randy is attempting to raise awareness and consciousness around the genocide in Gaza, and that's certainly a noble cause. But realistically, what do you think, Saeed, it's going to take to get the U.S. and the rest of the world to put an end to this genocide? I mean, we're being forced to watch on our TV screens every day masses of children clamoring for food to be put in their pots, tears streaming down their faces. Other children have bodies reduced to skeletons. Is any progress being made toward forcing the Israelis to stop bombing and starving the people of Gaza, to open up the blockades and allow ships to deliver food?
Yeah, good questions, Verna, and thank you for what you're doing, Randy. Well, I mean, that is a huge question for sure. I'm afraid, Verna, that the United States of America, whether it's Democrat or Republicans, we saw the same thing from Biden that we see now from Trump. They are basically, you know, they're masters of this genocide. They're the ones that made this genocide possible. They're the ones that gave Israel all the weapons, about, what, $23 billion worth of arms. They gave them the green light. The Biden administration basically, cast like four vetoes against ending this war, ending this genocide. Trump cast one veto just a couple months ago and so on. They do it. They do everything possible to ensure that this genocide goes on until the one goal of this genocide is achieved. And let's face it, the goal is basically to ethnically cleanse Gaza, period. It doesn't have any other purpose. It's not a war against Hamas and fighters and so on. You know, they destroyed it. Then we saw idea that came out last week about, a Gaza designed by artificial intelligence and so on, the Riviera of the Middle East, and throwing all the Palestinians out. So the short answer of your question, we are not likely to see an end to this war until something happens in the White House. They feel that Israel is becoming too isolated, a pariah state all throughout the world, and with it, the United States of America. But there are no signs. There are no signs that they have intent to end this genocide. Remember, there was a deal submitted by Steve Witkoff, Trump's envoy to everything, I guess, to the Middle East and Ukraine and all these things. He submitted a proposal, and Hamas agreed to it. Then Israel had not even responded for 2 weeks, and they continue with this onslaught in Gaza. So, everything, when you look at everything, whether in details or in the broader picture, you will find that there is nothing on the horizon that we can say, this genocide is going to end. And there's also the lack of pressure by Arabs, by Muslim nations, and so on. So the Palestinians are left alone, and Gazans are really alone.
So the International Association of Genocide Scholars determined that the activities in Gaza fit the legal definition of genocide. Are there consequences for committing genocide? And if so, what are they? And would the U.S. be complicit in the genocide, in as much as, have you said, they have been basically the architects of this genocide through their arming of Israel, et cetera?
Yes, absolutely they are complicit. They have always been complicit with Israel. There is no daylight between the United States of America and Israel all along. We saw that the Obama administration back in 2014, when Israel also launched a war against Gaza for 52 days. And we saw them, they were fine with that. They were always parroting out the Israeli position and so on. So this is historical. There is nothing new in America's support of Israel's aggressions and genocide and so on. We understand that this has now been determined to be a genocide.
What are the consequences of that?
Well, the consequences ought to be consistent with international law, but there is none, because the United States of America is lawless, Israel is lawless, the West is hypocritical and lawless in many ways, and they are the ones that matter as far as the genocide is concerned, for from Israel's perspective. So there ought to be these people ought to be brought before the ICC. We know that there are warrant arrests for Netanyahu and for Gallant, the Israeli prime minister, and his and the former minister of defense, Gallant. But nobody is taking it seriously. We saw that Netanyahu, for instance, went over the airspace of Italy and other European countries, and he was wanted. By law, they should have brought his plane down, not shoot it down, but they should have forced him to land and put him in prison. They did not. So, it's a mockery. International law is a mockery. But, there ought to be a mechanism that will bring all these criminals and put them before a tribunal and see how and where they committed genocide. There must be effort by these countries to basically arrest soldiers and officers that committed genocide, the American officials that aided it, statements by the Biden administration, officials of the Biden administration, statements by the president of the United States of America, when he says, yeah, that Gazans should expect nothing but death and destruction. We're going to open the gates of hell on them. I mean, he said those words time after night. So there is the intent. I mean, genocide is determined by intent. The intent has always been expressed, Verna, by officials, Israeli officials, American officials, and others.
Well, what about the rest of the world? I mean, what about the Arab world? It seems like everybody's just standing by and allowing this to happen. Why isn't the Arab world more engaged in stopping this genocide?
A very good question and heartbreaking question, because the Arab countries are not only divided, they really have no sovereignty. They have no ability to say this is our sovereign decision and so on. Remember, you know, the United States of America went on to implement the neocons agenda based in clean break and so on, which wanted to destroy seven countries and take it over in 5 years, and they did. They did it in Libya, Syria, Iraq, and so on, and all these things. And the purpose is really to divide it for two things: for to keep the Middle East broken, and to give Israel whatever elbow room and so on to do. So the Arab countries are not independent. They really have no say so. Otherwise, you had all these meetings of 57 Arab and Muslim countries and have not been able to basically deliver one barrel of flour or baby formula and so on. So they are really useless. They are not going to leverage their power, because they are protected, countries, the oil-rich countries, which Trump visited in May, and they gave him trillions of dollars, They could have said, okay, we will give you all this money and so on for allowing the aid to go in. But this is, there is total powerlessness on behalf, on the Arab side, on the Muslim side. And Europe is hypocritical historically. They are. Mm-hmm. They feel that Israel is their last vestige of their colonial projects and so on, and they are going to defend it till the end.
So, Saeed Erekat, at the recent Democratic National Committee meeting, there seemed to be some progress when two proposals were presented, and the one calling for a ceasefire was approved. The second proposal called for a ceasefire and a lot more. It wanted an arms embargo and military aid to Israel suspended. So the chair eventually withdrew his proposal and called for a task force to work on the issue. Right. Will this issue of Gaza split the Democratic Party and result in the Democrats not gaining the seats they need to gain in Congress to take back control of the Congress, do you think?
Yes, it's quite possible. And let's remember, Verna, a major reason or a major cause of their loss in last November, Kamala Harris and Waltz and so on, the reason is because of their position on Gaza. I mean, they could have probably have won the election. That's what a lot of analysts and so on are saying. So there is, there is a history to this. And by the way, it's not only the Democrats, but also the Republicans. I mean, look at the National Conservative Committee meeting that is ongoing now, as a matter of fact. It started yesterday on Tuesday and ends tomorrow. And there's a split over Israel, because you have the right wing like Bannon and Gitz and so on, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I'm not a fan, but they're saying, look, you can't be America first, but Israel, except for Israel, but right after Israel and so on. So there's a real split in there. I mean, we saw and we hear some things that are coming out from the right that basically shows some sort of cracks in their coalition. For the Democrats have a great opportunity to regain the House and regain the Senate and set themselves, position themselves well for the 2028 election. But they're not doing it. Look what is happening in New York and the mayoral. Not many Democrats have come to support Mamdani, right? So we have not seen that. We saw that people like Schumer and so on that actually have been completely ineffective. They cannot lead. They are opportunistic. They have no vision and so on. Are still at the top of the party. They need to get rid of these dinosaurs. They need to have new blood, and it's there because the progressive wing of the party is definitely or definitely has a clearer vision on the path forward. So in many ways, because all these things are connected. You cannot be, I mean, quite simply, you cannot be progressive on this and that except for Israel or except for Palestine. You can't do that.
Maybe Randy will run again and move some of these dinosaurs out of the Congress. But will that dynamic, Saeed, force the pro-Israel wing of the Democratic Party to concede and compromise more, do you think?
Verna, we are seeing signs of that. We saw that people who have been really owned by AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, the powerful lobby. We've seen cracks in that. We've seen people are basically swearing off AIPAC on AIPAC money and so on. And they are winning. I mean, they are winning with their base. It shows you that this it's really just a huge lever of blackmail by Israel and its lobby. So we're beginning to see cracks. In fact, oddly enough, there was an interview with the Daily Caller for with Trump. They did an interview with him that was I guess published on Monday, in which he said, Israel is beginning to lose its grip on Congress. I mean, he said that. He said Israel is beginning to lose its grip on Congress. So yes, the answer is, if you get away from the lobby and so on, you can win, and you can win strong, and you can liberate yourself from this noose around your neck. And that's what we have seen in New York, and that's what we have seen with very strong congressmen like Ro Khanna from California and so on. That's what we have seen with many members of Congress, that it is, and it's growing every day. We've seen, a couple of months ago, 27 members of the Democratic members of the Senate signed on to I mean, voted for some for a proposal, a proposed notion not sending arms to Israel and so on. We see it in the House. So yes, I mean, there is a if there's a proper progressive leadership, I think they can do both. They can regain the House, and they can gain the dignity, regain the dignity.
And there's a freedom flotilla that is set to launch sail, I think, on September 4th, which will once again attempt to, break down the blockade. So every effort is contributing to this. Randy's efforts, as well as Randy Crerico's efforts, as well as all the other efforts. Chris Smalls was on with us a couple of weeks ago. He joined one of the flotillas, was imprisoned and beat, but he said he would go back. So, any final thoughts? We have about a minute left. Randy, did you want to make a final statement?
I just want to say about the Congress, in terms of my state, you got Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer and the rest of them. They're all bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby. And so there's no hope there. Maybe Mamdani will win against a very corrupt governor who supports the genocide, Andrew Cuomo. But I there's not much I can add, Mr. Saeed. Said it all there. And just keep doing what you can do. I mean, you just don't give. You got to keep moving forward here. This is Israel has basically committed suicide in the future. They've been hit by a asteroid, to be honest with you. We'll never get out of this.
So, Saeed Erekat, Palestinian journalist, Washington bureau chief for Al-Quds, and professor at American University. And you just heard Randy Critico, American politician, activist, comedian, and free.
And politician. Mindless theater. Performance art.
You ran for office three times, Randy.
Oh, so I'm not perennial.
Right. Okay.
I was against Cuomo, and I was Democracy Now, and I said Cuomo went to the caves, but he didn't go to the graves. That's in 2014 when he was there. And okay. So,
All right. Well, I want to thank you both so very much for being our guests this morning on What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. When we come back, there's a county in New York where the Democratic senator won her 2024 race handily. But in that same county, Kamala Harris got zero votes for the presidency. Lulu Freitas, a smart election, says ask the court to figure it out. Stay with us.
This is your social justice calendar for the week of September 1st, 2025. On Wednesday, September 3rd, from 6 to 9 p.m., movements from across D.C. are coming together for a community town hall on non-cooperation, history, strategy, and action with political education, poetry, youth art, and music. Located at 1615 14th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., John Wesley AME Zion Church, there will be a teach-in on standing up against ICE and police harassment, organized for freedom in D.C., and much more. Special guests include Derek Musgrove, author of Chocolate City and Freedom Futures Collective. For more info and RSVP, visit bit.ly/refuse-resist-rebuild. On Saturday, September 6th, at 12 noon, a coalition of D.C. area organizations, including the Metro Council, AFL-CIO, Free D.C., and many more, are calling on allies from the region and nationwide to join D.C. communities for We Are All D.C., a national march in solidarity with D.C. communities to end the occupation of D.C. The march will convene Saturday, 11 a.m. at Malcolm X Park on 16th Street between W Street and Euclid. It will begin at 12 noon and continue on to the White House. For more general and updated info, visit weareallDC.com. On Saturday, September 6th, from 12 to 4 p.m. at University of D.C., 4200 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C., Rising organizers host the D.C. Community Organizing Festival, a gathering of over 20 grassroots organizations ready to connect, learn, and take action together. For more info and to register now, go to bit.ly/DCOrgFest. Sunday, September 7th, from 7 to 9 p.m., Haile Gerima and Sankofa Video and Books present Congo on Our Mind, a bi-weekly community gathering artists and performers committed to liberation and justice. Located on 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. For more info, visit Sankofa.com. WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, the popular narrative after the 2024 election was that Trump won by a landslide, that he swept all seven swing states and was ushered into the office with a decisive majority. But in Rockland County, New York, results of the county's election are being called into question. Major discrepancies in something known as the drop-off rate have caused Lulu Freistadt to file suit demanding a full recount. Lulu is the founder and executive director of Smart Elections. Welcome to What's at Stake, Lulu Freistadt.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So now, Smart Elections has filed a lawsuit. demanding a full hand recount because of discrepancies in the election results. And there were two categories of irregularities, the so-called drop-offs and discrepancies in the affidavits. So let's start with a drop-off. Explain exactly what that is, Zulu.
Okay, and just to be technically accurate, we filed the lawsuit through the action arm of our organization, which is called Smart Legislation.
But, okay.
But we are prosecuting the lawsuit, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we're there in Rockland County in particular, as you said, is because not only are there statistical anomalies, but there is also physical evidence that the election results are not accurate. And so, I'm sorry, you wanted to start with the drop-off, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, tell us what exactly is the drop-off rate.
Drop-off is a term that Smart Elections coined to try to describe this particular phenomenon. And basically something that happened throughout the country in 2024 is that the presidential race had a very different result than the down-ballot races. And when we say down-ballot, we mean a race like a Senate, a congressperson, attorney general, and generally speaking, you have people who are pretty loyal to their party. And so if they're going to vote for the president, they're going to vote for those down ballot races with the same political affiliation. So in 2020, there was a major study that was done by top experts from Yale, Harvard, Columbia, MIT, and they determined that what you call the drop-off or the difference between the top of the ticket and the down ballot for the same political party was around 1 to 2%. It was 1% for Democrats and 2% for Republicans, I believe, on average. But in the 2024 election across the country, that drop-off was much, much larger. And it was larger in the swing states than in the non-swing states. And there's no logical explanation for that. There's no reason why people in the swing states would vote remarkably differently than people in the non-swing states. So we calculated that drop-off by basically doing subtraction. We subtracted the number of votes in the down ballot race from the presidential race. And then we did division. This is all just basic math. It's not complex. So then you take that number, which is really the raw votes, the number between the two races, and then you divide that by the presidential race and you get a percentage. And what that percentage tells you is kind of how much of the presidential race is either way above or way below the senator or the congressperson. And in Trump's case, he's always way above. He's always getting these huge percentages. A huge percentage of his vote is floating up there above the Senate on the Republican side. And for some reason on Kamala Harris's case, her votes are often actually below the attorney general, below the senators of the Democratic side, sometimes even below local officials on the Democratic side, which just does not make any sense.
So you're saying that's what occurred in 2024? That's
what in 2024, that is what occurred. And it was remarkably different than the last election cycle.
Oh, so let me just be clear, Lulu. Basically, you're sort of assuming that if this is a blue district, or a blue county or whatever, because they have voted for the senator handily. So you kind of assume that that's a blue county. But yet nobody votes for Kamala Harris for the presidency.
Not nobody, but less than the down ballot. So I will give you an example of that. In Durham County, North Carolina, Durham County, North Carolina is one of the Democratic strongholds in the country. I've been there. I know people there. It is one of the most loyal Democratic counties in the country. In Durham County, North Carolina, Kamala Harris got fewer votes than the attorney than the attorney general on the Democratic side. It just doesn't really make any sense. They were all in for Kamala Harris in that county. So you can't really figure out why the votes didn't come through. And in fact, the other thing that is extremely odd in terms of this drop-off pattern is that you have states where Kamala Harris got less votes than the down-ballot Democratic candidate in every single county in the state. And that is a very strange pattern. And you see that pattern in states that have remarkably different demographics, different voting habits, different history. So you see that pattern where she has less votes than the down ballot race in every single county, and Trump has more votes than the down ballot race in every single county. And you see that in North Carolina, in Arizona, in Montana, in Ohio, in North Dakota, almost every county in New York, with just a few exceptions, in Hawaii and in Connecticut. Those were also Wisconsin. Those were the states that we did an initial analysis of. And when we showed that to a statistician, he said, the pattern is so unusual, you don't need a statistician to tell you that something is going on there. There's something very odd and unusual about those results. And one thing I will say is that in Hawaii, they are actually starting to investigate. So at the end of August, they actually had a vote there, and the Kauai Elections Commission is going to be auditing their elections because they had discrepancies that they discovered. So this is starting to unravel, not just in our case in Rockland County, but in other states around the country.
So in your case, your lawsuit in Rockland County, was there not one area where Kamala Harris got zero votes? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. So one explanation was offered that there's a county in Rockland County. There's one, I guess, are these cities?
They're towns. So Rockland County has five towns.
Okay.
It has Ramapo, Clarkstown, Haverstraw, Stony Point, and I have to look up the fifth one.
So one person explained that, well, you know, one of those towns is occupied by Hasidic and Orthodox Jews, and oftentimes they vote in a monolithic block following the directions of their rabbi. And so it wouldn't be unusual for Kamala not to get any votes, because if they were instructed to vote according to their rabbi's directions.
So there's a couple things about the voting patterns in Ramapo, and Orangetown is the last one that I didn't mention. So there's five towns there, and Ramapo is where the Hasidic community is primarily centered. There are, you know, there's some Hasidic presence in a few of the other towns, but there are also towns where there really is almost no Hasidic presence. So all of the districts where Kamala Harris got zero votes and Kirsten Gillibrand, the Democratic senator, won, those are districts that are in the predominantly Hasidic community in Ramapo. However, in the other four towns, we also did a statistical analysis which showed a very unusual voting pattern. And basically, we compared that same drop-off pattern in 2024 to the drop-off pattern in 2020. And we had an academic statistician, somebody who is actually published a statistical textbook. So an experienced statistician looked at that. And what he said is that there is statistical significance between the 2024 results and the 2020, such that the 2024 results seem highly unlikely, highly improbable. It's what's called a p-value, and it's measuring the likelihood that those two results are somehow coherent. And the 2024 results look highly unlikely. And this is in the four towns where there is not a strong Hasidic presence, and including, we've done, you know, deep dives talking to people in the communities, really talking to local residents. In two of those towns, at least, there's almost a zero Hasidic presence. And yet the results are highly unusual. So although there has been some pushback that the problem can be completely explained by the Hasidic community, that is not what the data suggests.
So you're referring to Alabama, University of Alabama professor of physics and astronomy, Max Bonamente?
That's correct.
Are you? All right. So he also wrote the paper on statistics and analysis of scientific data And they found, as you, he found, as you said, that the 2024 results are highly unlikely in four out of the five Rockland County cities. But when I reached out to him yesterday to invite him on the show, he said he doesn't want to talk about this anymore, and he abruptly hung up. Your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I can't speak for Max and what he wants or doesn't want to, you know, engage in terms of the media. I know that he has received a lot of negative pushback in terms of his research, and an academic, generally speaking, isn't somebody who sets out to get a lot of publicity. He's there trying to do his research, teaching his classes. He stands by his research. You didn't hear him say that he doesn't stand by the research. He stands by the research, and I've had multiple conversations with him. The data is the data, and the analysis is accurate. But the mm-hmm. fact that he doesn't want to go on a radio show, I don't think is surprising for an academic.
Mm-hmm. And he is in Alabama, which I believe is a red state.
Alabama's pretty conservative.
So I would imagine that he's got a lot of feedback from his studies. Well, we should point out that regardless of how the court rules in your case, nothing is going to change the outcome of the election, which has been certified by the U.S. Congress. Trump will not be removed from office because of the ruling in this lawsuit. So, you know, we should just make sure that everyone is clear about that.
Verna, I don't think we know what will happen. I don't think we've been in that territory. If we actually have legal evidence that starts to suggest that the presidential and the Senate races are not accurately counted, I think we will start to see other states also wanting to count their election results. I know there is a push now to count votes in both Pennsylvania and North Carolina and probably Florida. And as I said, they've already started doing an audit in Hawaii. I don't think we know what will happen. I don't think we've ever had that circumstance where people across the entire country actually believe that the election results are inaccurate. And we actually are seeing that in the polls now. So there was an NBC poll that said that 41% of Harris voters in 2024 do not believe that the election was legitimate. And 70% of Trump voters from 2020 don't believe the 2020 election was legitimate. And when you actually put those two statistics together, 53% of the voters who voted in the last two election cycles do not believe the results if their candidate lost. And that is really a tipping point. You're talking about over half of the voters who participated no longer believe the results. We are in really troubled territory.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about the second major discrepancies discovered in Rockland County, the affidavits. Explain the concern with the affidavits, Lulu.
So one of the reasons why we filed the lawsuit in Rockland County, as opposed to some of the other states where we also have very strong discrepancies, is that in Rockland County, we have physical evidence that the results are incorrect. And so there was an independent candidate in Rockland County named Diane Sayre. Diane ran for Senate. This is the second time that she's run. She also ran in 2022, and there were very strange discrepancies with her results in 2022. So in 2024, when she saw her results, she was very surprised, and she said, "I don't believe these results. I think these are much fewer votes than I actually got." Remember that she had to sign, she had to get signatures to get on the ballot. And when you're getting more signatures to get on the ballot than you actually wind up getting votes, it does cause concern. You think, well, those people, I already knew that they supported me. And she was surprised at how low her results were. So she just literally started going down her block and got people to sign a sworn affidavit who voted for her. And she, in a relatively short period of time, came up with more votes in two separate districts than the Rockland County, Board of Elections actually counted and reported. And these are large percentages. They are small in terms of the number of votes, but if you look at the percentages, they are huge. And if you extrapolate those percentages across the county, if those are the same type of mistakes that are being made in the results across the county, they're huge. There's one district where 40% of her votes at least seem to be missing, and another district where 44% of her votes seem to be missing. And again, if you extrapolate that, one of the, you're talking about really, really large numbers. And one of the things that you have to really think about at this point is why? Why are somehow her votes not being counted? There's really two explanations. One is that the voting machines are counting inaccurately. If the voting machines aren't counting accurately, they're not just randomly counting Diane Sayre's votes inaccurately. If the voting machines are counting inaccurately, they're probably counting many other races inaccurately, and we would want to get in there and count the paper ballots and see what's going on. The other possibility is that there's some sort of foul play. If there's some sort of foul play, again, it's highly unlikely that it's just isolated to Diane Sayre's race because she was an independent candidate with a very small number of votes. Nobody would just mess with Diane Sayre's votes, or highly unlikely that someone would mess with her votes just to mess with her votes. More likely, it's that they're switching votes from one candidate to another candidate, and they're trying to pull third-party votes in to bump up another candidate. So if there is some type of foul play, quite likely that it is not isolated to Diane Sayre. And again, you would want to get in there and find out what's happening. And I do want to emphasize that we're nonpartisan. We work with groups and individuals across the political spectrum. We are there to figure out what is going on in the election so that we can try to have fair, accurate, reliable, secure elections that voters have confidence in. And that is not where we are right now.
So why weren't there affidavits in the presidential race? I mean, that seems like good, solid proof. She said, you know, I have affidavits from these people that said they voted for me, yet I only came up with X amount of votes, far less than the affidavits I'm holding in my hands. Why weren't there affidavits in the presidential race?
So we are looking to get affidavits in the presidential race. At this point, we had to file our lawsuit within 30 days of the election. So we had to move rapidly. And those were the affidavits that we got by December 5th when we had to file the lawsuit. And once we filed that lawsuit, we have to prosecute the case that we have the case that we have brought. So the case that we have brought has the affidavits for Diane Sayre, and we've been focused so far on making sure that we do a good job in this lawsuit. It's very time consuming. I don't know if you've ever filed a lawsuit, but we put together an incredibly in-depth discovery list of 16 pages of items and information that we want from the Rockland County Board of Elections. We're also doing a lot of research on the actual security of the election offices and looking at the equipment. We found many security vulnerabilities and possible vulnerabilities in the software updates. And then now at this point, they filed their second amended, which is basically their third motion to dismiss. And so we had to put together a very strong defense for their motion to defend. So all of that is time consuming and expensive. And that's what we've been focused on so far. And now at this point, we've gotten our motion, our response to the motion to defend. It was extremely strong. We worked very hard on it. And now we are going to be seeing if we can go door to door and get some of those Harris affidavits, if they do exist. You know, sometimes it's hard to get people to sign an affidavit about how they voted, but we're going to see what we can do.
So a recount that you're calling for through your lawsuit, well, that would only involve paper ballots, correct? And didn't they use voter machines as well? So why just recount the paper ballots? Why not factor in all of the ballots? Or is that possible?
So in New York, we vote on paper ballots. That's what we have. We have hand-marked paper ballots, and then sometimes if a voter has a disability, they take that ballot and they have a ballot marking device mark it for them, but it is the same paper ballot that other voters vote on. And then in addition to that, we have mail-in ballots. Those are also paper ballots. If we're concerned that the voting machines are counting incorrectly, then the best option for us is to look at all of the paper ballots and count them by hand. Now, one thing I will say is that the county has now had a considerable length of time, more than 6 months.
1 minute left.
Okay, they've had a lot of time. And if there has been foul play, we don't know what the chain of custody is of those paper ballots. And so we're trying to find out whether or not we actually think they were secure enough that the paper ballots are still a reasonable record of the vote. And I do just want to shout out our website. It is smartelections.us. And you can also go there and make a donation if you want to support our work. We live by your donations. That is why we're able to do the work at smartelections.us. And there's more information there.
And so when is the next court hearing or ruling?
There's no hearing on the books right now. The County has 2 weeks to make what's called a reply to our response on the motion to dismiss. And then the judge has 60 days in order to make a ruling on the motion to dismiss. She's not ruling on the recount yet. Her motion, her ruling is due by November 11th.
Okay. So, you know, finally, there was one group, one political science professor at Northeastern is quoted in Newsweek as saying, statistical irregularities are not always nefarious. Drop-off inconsistencies could reflect the idiosyncratic nature of the 2024 election cycle and that comparing it to previous cycles cannot provide definitive proof of wrongdoing. So, and as much as you know from the beginning that this lawsuit will not change the results, well, you're saying...
I'm saying you
you're
don't
not,
know.
You're not clear.
I don't think you know what's going to happen. I can't predict the future, and I don't think anyone else can.
Well, you know, who knows what will happen if the Democrats regain control of the Congress and an impeachment hearing takes place and these results are entered into evidence. Who knows? Anyway, we're going to have to end it at that. Lula Frasdat, founder and executive director of Smart Elections, thank you for joining us this morning on What's at Stake.
Thank you again for having me as a guest.
That's going to do it for this week's What's at Stake. Thanks to all our guests this morning. And thank you to you, our generous listeners that carried us through the pledge drive. Thanks to our engineer extraordinaire, Michael Nasella. Up next, Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. E. Faye Williams. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In the words of the late, great Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done.
Are you ready to move, groove, and exercise with the WPFW family? WPFW's annual 5K Run Walk for Total Fitness happens Saturday, September 13th from 8 a.m. till 1 p.m. This fundraiser will be held at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland. In addition to a scenic 5K trail, fitness and wellness classes will be offered. Lively music to fuel your participation in the activities, along with water and healthy snacks, will be provided. Details are at WPFWFM.org or call 202-888-5484. There's something for everyone to enjoy. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Jazzy Sundays at Anacostia, an 8-week jazz and R&B concert series happening this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. in the heart of the Anacostia Arts District at 1234 Marion Barry Avenue. Food vendors will be on site and lawn chairs are welcome. Jazzy Sundays in Anacostia runs through Sunday, September the 7th. Details at anacostiabid.org.
Brazilian nonprofit Educarte presents a night of Afro-Brazilian culture with Ile Aie percussion and dance ensemble from Liberdade Salvador, Brazil, celebrating its 50th anniversary with a return to Washington, D.C. on Friday, September 5th, 8 p.m. at the UDC Theater of the Arts at 4200 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. Their performances feature drumming, songs that tell the stories of resistance and hope, and dances inspired by the orishas and traditions of candomblé. Details about this Afro-Brazilian celebration in D.C. featuring Ile Aie at educarteinc.org, educarteinc.org, or 202-450-8541.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM.org, where you can also contribute anytime. WPFW, preserving the culture, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, The United Black Community presents the 21st annual Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to another Ruth, John Coltrane, featuring the Nasa Abaday Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19, 2025 at 7 p.m. at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, ubcndc@yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back and is coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy.